It's Wednesday, December 30th, 2009, and you're listening to episode 175 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 1 hour and 4 minutes.
Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name is John.
My name is Chad.
This is Wayne.
And my name is Pat.
Chris is not with us. We have some good news, which is that...
I thought that was the good news.
I did too,
but... Chris is not with us.
Well, so I'll actually talk this time.
We have some good news for Chris, not just about Chris, which is he took and passed his physical therapist.
No. Yay, Chris!
Oh, wait, not physical therapist.
No, he's not a physical therapist.
Personal trainer, the other PT. The only thing that screws me up is the fact that we have, I think, 3 physical therapy schools in St. Louis. In fact, somebody told me that there are more physical therapy schools in St. Louis than anywhere else in the U.S. Whenever I hear PT, what comes to mind is physical therapy, whereas Chris took personal training. So Chris is now a certified personal trainer, but...
My understanding is that we also have a very large chiropractic college here, too.
I think it's...
Logan College?
Logan Chiropractic. Yeah. I have been told, now I'm not in the chiropractic field, but I've been told that it's pretty, not prestigious, but...
Yeah.
Big, popular, I guess.
But the...
Quackery.
I'll
take popularity over prestige any day. I'm on Fear the Boot.
The downside to Chris...
I'll take real science over chiropractic any day.
Well, Missouri chiropractors are also nothing like chiropractors in other states who can actually do prescriptions or have real medical degrees.
Mm-hmm.
The downside to Chris's situation is he passed his personal training test.
Yes.
But then his laptop... bellied up, so he's not on the show. So instead...
Well, that's what happens when they're the size of a table and they're from God knows when.
There's little beads that slide back and forth
on his laptop. I picture his laptop as being one of those table arcade machines, you know, the ones that 2 people can set at and they're flat.
I'm picturing
horizontal.
I'm picturing Leonard Nimoy announcing the invention of his laptop.
Dude, I'm pretty sure the name of his computer ends in 2C. That's all you have to know.
So I
want locust ends in 2C.
Mine ends in 1E. But I want to welcome you guys to the quattrosepcentennial episode of Fear the Boot.
Look at me, I'm Dan.
Episode 175.
Thesaurus.com, engage!
Actually, we have. I went out and checked.
What is that, $1.50?
$1.75.
Oh, wow. Farther than I thought.
I went out and checked, and we actually have around, depending on which ones you count and how you count them, we have between 210 and 220 total episodes. But in terms of regular episodes, this is number 175. I've got some shout-outs, but we're going to save those to 176 because over the past couple of shows, we've done a lot of miscellaneous stuff. So this one, I've got one announcement after which this is going to be a pure hardcore balls-to-the-wall RPG episode.
What if I have shout-outs? I have 2 shout-outs.
You can save them to 176.
I heard hardcore. I'm excited. Let's go.
Here's a screwdriver. Carve these shout-outs into something. And we'll do them in 176. So the one announcement I have is Fear the Con 3 ticketing and sign up for events will go live on January 1st, 2010. So right now, if you go out to fearthecon.com, there's this crappy maroon colored placeholder website. But on January 1st, 2010, there will be a real website where you can go and sign up for events. So go to fearthecon.com on January 1st and you will be able to sign up for stuff. After then, we will run a bonus episode giving you guys some more information, some last minute reminders. But just remember that as soon as the new year hits, you will be able to sign up for Fear the Con, start setting up your events, start signing up early for events you want to get into.
And
that
I will
be crowded.
Say this, we need game masters because every year we need game
Step
masters.
Up. Your game cannot be worse than my Earthshaker game.
Yes.
You will not be the worst GM at that place.
Yes.
Thanks, Dan.
You're welcome.
And I would also like to say the flyers have started going out because I personally drove all over Kansas City, dropping them at anywhere that would let me put them on the
counter.
And
then we have some in Springfield, Missouri.
MetaGames. Yeah, I went to the one big store in Springfield.
And can we get some flyers in Rolla?
Rolla? Who the hell is in Rolla?
Are you talking about Columbia?
Columbia?
Yes, I would go to Valhalla's Gate in Columbia, act like I'm going to do a Magic Booster draft, not and put Fear the Con flyers
Cheshire
up.
Does Cheshire Cat still exist down there?
No,
I've not
I shouldn't say
that. The one place the flyers haven't rolled out is where we all live here in St. Louis.
Oh, pish. Next
couple weeks, they will start rolling
out. Actually, next couple days, they're going to start rolling
out.
Well,
you have to understand, these were opportunities of, I can't even say what I was going to say.
Ask Dan, he's the one with the $10 words.
That's right, he's drunk and on
thesaurus.com, so.
These were prime travel opportunities.
Exactly. Yes. That's why they're out there. So,
you know, Dan, next episode, you said I can't do my shout outs, but I'm not going to remember what my shout outs are. So I want to tell you right now that next episode, I will be giving my shout out to my Secret Santa, which will be horribly late, by the way, because I got an ultra cool thing. And
that's fine. My Secret Santa's on my list, too. But I wrote
I will
it down.
Do the same thing.
And
too.
I
you wouldn't believe what keyboards are capable of.
Keyboards.
All right. So
my other shout out, which I will forget, is to the St. Louis area board game meetup group.
All right.
Which I went to one of their meetups. That's, and it was awesome.
Maybe cool. We'll remember it next episode. Maybe mm-hmm. we won't. But if you have not been to Fear of the Con in past years, you want to come this
do
year.
It.
If you have been in past years, you know why you want to come back.
Yeah.
So be here for Fear of the Con 3 in March of 2010.
Do I have to go?
Yes, you do.
All right.
All right.
Unless more people will show up if you don't come.
So let's roll. Yeah.
Hey, I'll take one for the team.
Let's roll.
Whatever, sexy voice.
That's right.
No.
To explain that briefly, apparently a maybe junior high, probably high school.
14-year-old.
Yes, 14-year-old.
That's freshman year.
Freshman year high school class.
A man. He's a man at 14.
Yeah, well, this guy played an episode of Fear the Boot or some portion of it to a class. That's and right. The girls in the class took up a vote. And their vote was
guess
that Chad has the sexiest voice.
Yeah, he does.
So among the jailbait demographic, Chad is the hottest, most desired
hey buddy,
man.
14 will get you 20.
Well, that's right. You
know, so if the 14-year-olds all love Chad,
as opposed to John, where 20 gets you 40.
I'm putting the call out for 15-year-olds.
24 gets you 44 right here.
So, all right, let's roll straight into the RPG stuff. Wayne was saying something, but it's probably stupid. So
I was just putting the call out for the 15-year-olds to all vote forever. To all vote for my sexy voice.
I was just trying to get my to go down because Chad just spoke into the microphone a second ago.
That's
so.
Right.
That the 14-year-old girl in all of us.
Mm-hmm. Pat?
All right, John.
Hot, wet, loving.
Yeah. Oh, God.
You posted something on our forum within the back room about why you love and hate.
No, I think the title of it was John Hates Player Characters.
Well, it was, but you eventually did give a few points on why you love them. So
that
I
was drunk obligatory equivocation. I really hate them all.
He loves them dead.
Like I said, we're going to dive straight into the role-playing content here. So let's start off with why does John hate player characters?
Okay, well, let's do a little background.
What is
I have not character? Run a straight game since college.
You know what?
Gay
one.
Gay,
is,
straight, it doesn't
admit,
matter.
Okay,
don't ask, don't tell.
A regular game,
judge.
Pat.
We're not here to judge you.
Yes, we are.
Yes, we are.
If your games are like X2, that's okay.
X2, the movie?
Final Fantasy.
Oh, no. You're the one who likes that. I was going to say X-Men 2 is awesome. Anyway, I have not run a regular game as a game master since I got out and went to law school, which now is like 2 years ago. So I've been running it on MapTool, and it's pretty cool. Dan's in it.
Actually, yeah, MapTool is pretty cool. I wish there was better libraries available for it. I'm
or
sure
images?
There, yeah, of images. I'm sure they're out there. I'm just having trouble finding them.
Yeah, Fear the Boot contest. Find a bunch of goblins on MapTool and put it on the forums.
Find a bunch of anything.
Or in my
Map
private
tools.
Box, and I'll give you a custom title. Woo!
But I would love to add some. But Matt, that aside, MapTools, I have to say, is actually pretty good. If you're running a remote game, MapTools is pretty solid.
I was always a skeptic. My problem was I ran forum games and not session online.
Right.
And in one session game, you can get done like 6 months of forum content.
But to set this more fully, right now, since you're stranded in Columbia, Missouri, away from home.
I'm not exactly stranded. I'm really liking it there. But there's not enough gamers to make a game.
Right. So you are running a remote game that consists of me here in St. Louis.
Yes.
Some guys in New York.
No, they're all in Philly.
Oh, they're in Philly.
Yeah, George from the Trapcast is in my player character group. And our mutual friends, Miranda and Mario and Dan, and our mutual friend, Kevin from Seattle.
And it's a D&D 3.5 game where we are playing members of a tribe of goblins.
Yes.
And it's a fun game. I'm not going to bore you guys with the games, but it's a fun game. But we're using MapTool to run the game because John and I are an hour and a half away by car, and these guys are probably like 3 hours away by plane.
Yeah.
So it's a remote game. So continue.
As I was running again, a bunch of old, long hidden thoughts came up, and I thought, man, I really hate player characters. I'm running this game, and I'm running it for PCs, but I hate them
all.
What
do you want, 5 GMs
all they do is
gaming?
Yes! That's my first point! Point one! Having frequent GMs as player characters is best when you're GMing.
Yes, I agree.
People with GM chops are better at hardening the fudge up and not being carried all the gosh darn time by people without GM chops.
You've
and
never
Chad,
used the term gosh
you
darn.
Made this point vis-a-vis me when mm-hmm. I was a PC
yes,
in your
totally.
Game. Because it's like...
Best player I've ever had, John.
I've never had to turn around to someone who GMs frequently and say, man, I'm really sorry we spent 20 minutes without focusing on your backstory. Players who never GM'd will cry if you don't.
Yeah.
All right, case in point. Let me stroke my own ego here. This is Fear the Boot. When the game kicked off, there was a point where we were all supposed to be called.
And you attempted to leave the game. Yeah, you're a f***.
But no. We were supposed to be called to do a particular thing. And my character gave a little bit of resistance, but I told you behind the scenes, because we had AIM up and we were conversing.
I'm constantly colluding with my player characters, unknown to the rest of them.
We were colluding outside of the game, and I even told you straight up, I said, look, I'm just RPing. If you push the issue, my character will do exactly what you want.
I got you back into it fair and square.
Yeah, I'm just busting, and I will have to say...
And I made you a local enemy.
Yes, you had an excellent way of getting me back in, because what happened...
All right, hold on. You guys need to give a little bit of background.
That's what I'm about to do.
A little bit of gaming story.
You guys need to do a little bit of gaming story. Even if it's not brief.
What was supposed to happen?
I have no clue what you guys are talking about.
We were playing members of a goblin tribe, and we were supposed to go out on a raid. And what happened was my character is a coward, okay? I'm playing a typical goblin.
And I've done this to GMs 100 times, so I don't feel sorry for myself.
He's a coward. And so they start calling for people to step up to join this particular excursion. And every one of the other player characters is in the excursion. I do a hide thing and roll really well.
No. I rolled your roll behind the screen. It was like a 19. And I was like, I can either say it was a 2 and just make him get called, or I can roll with the dice and try to think of something else. And I gave Dan his hide. I was like, you're hidden.
Yeah,
good
he,
job.
It didn't. What he did is he said, look, you're really well hidden. And I told him behind the scenes, I said, look, if they push the issue, eventually my sense of duty will overwhelm my cowardice. But what he did instead was had some other guy who was a rival of mine within the clan.
Well, he wasn't a rival. There's subsections within the clan, and one of them is the trap makers, who are like the general purpose rogue troubleshooters. And this other rogue guy didn't want to go either, so I had him push Dan out into the open so that he would get called on.
Yeah, and so I got called on, and then, of course, that ends up creating this rivalry between me and this other guy. So not only did I get drawn into the plot, but it also added something else for me to play with. But I told him in collusion behind the scenes, I said, look, if you push this issue, I realize this is where the plot is. I'm not going to be an ass. I will eventually play along if you push the issue. But I'll have to give John great props because... As a game master, he was really quick on his feet in terms of coming up with a different way of motivating my character that not only got me involved in the mission, but on top of that, created more for me to roleplay with because now I have somebody within the tribe that I hate for outing me.
And yeah, he survived, by the way. Frug lived. He got a term. He had to spend 2 days without sleeping or eating at the pot still making alcohol. And I did some rolls and then figured out that he lived. So he's still alive for you, Dan. He'll be back when we start again tomorrow. But anyway, the point of that was people who have a first-person appreciation of what GMing is, what's easy, what's hard, what's fun, what's not fun about it all, are the best player characters. Because you don't have to coddle them. In fact, they sometimes coddle you, which is the best.
Which is exactly what you did to me back in the day.
Well, yes.
Is you really helped me out with my game. And went beyond just, hey, man... Can you just sit tight while I deal with these whiny non-GM people? And he's like, yeah, cool, baby. But on the other hand, I could pull him aside. I could pull you aside, John, and I can do a little, listen, everybody's going left. It would really, really help me out if you got everyone to go right. And he's like, hey, I'm on it.
Yes, an appeal to my contrary nature always hits home.
I think that maybe the majority of the time you're probably right about that with players that have done GMing are the best, but I don't think that is a 100% a rule because I think there are a number of players and I would count myself among those because even though I have been behind the screen a few times, I would not really consider myself to be a game master.
See, I would even give you the chops.
I don't think I'm a,
even if
I don't
you've
think
just
I'm a
tried
bad
it a few
player.
Times,
I think I'm a fairly
I would
good
give
player.
You those chops.
That's one of the reasons I like Chad's idea of the rotating GM is even the people that are horrible GMs and should never try to run a game for someone, if they've had that week, that 2 weeks, you learn a lot during that time period. I definitely wouldn't suggest everyone sit down and run a game themselves, because there are just some people.
That's how it worked in my old group,
yeah,
man.
There are just some people that are just really bad at it.
People were pissing me off too much. It was, Dan has a whole tirade that you can go on of GM rights, as it were.
Yeah.
And I had a group that I had issues with. It's not that they were breaking the game, but it was just like they were not making it easy for the GM. And I think that's one of your points later on, is that players expect the GM to make concessions for them, but no player actually makes concessions for the GM.
Well,
or at least the tendency.
Kind of.
Yes, I could go on for
and you have
episodes. I mean, Dan extras that are hours in length, yeah, about GM rights, because the game master is the one who has to learn the rules, write the game, create the NPCs, roll with every idea you come up with, every problem in the game they have to solve. All a player has to do is write a minimal background and show up. And yet,
and half the time, they don't have to do either of those.
Yeah, yeah,
they
can't exactly. And then they expect the game master to carry even more. And it's what I have called in multiple places, not just within the RPG community, but in other situations as well, the baby bird mentality. That what you want to do is you want mama bird to go out, find the worm, eat the worm, digest the worm. All you're going to do is sit in the nest, open your mouth, and if mama bird doesn't vomit a pre-digested worm into your mouth...
This is the grossest metaphor ever.
Maybe, but then she has failed as a mama. And it's the same attitude that so many people have in so many situations, games included. Yeah. And
Dancer brought up the 80-20 rule. It's a fact. Except in gaming, we have codified and classified the 20, and they're called game masters.
Yeah.
I just believe that a game is a collaborative effort. It's a collaborative storytelling. Whether you've got a hardcore crunch dungeon crawl, whatever, or you've got a story stick narrative game, you are telling this story that is collaborative. You should be working together with the GM and the player, and the GM should be working with the player. It's got to be a two-way street, because I'm not 100% on board with your GM Bill of Rights, which you should write that one day. That'd be great. But
it's a British GM Bill of Rights. Yeah. It's unwritten.
Yes. I will tell you, as a player character, there is nothing more frustrating than creating these threads, these opportunities for the GM, essentially spoon-feeding them and having them completely ignore
it. Oh, I agree with that.
Or just completely gloss over
I
all
hate
of it.
Creating a real, what I think to be a really great plot hook and throwing it out to the GM. I mean, just like landing it out there, pointing to it.
Here's an email saying, hey, here's an idea about my character.
Yeah.
You don't have to do this, but here's some little plot hooks you could possibly.
And you'd never, ever.
And
ever
that is down in subheading B, John loves PCs.
we'll come back to that.
We'll get to that.
What's point two under John hates
right.
PCs?
Point two is people who refuse to GM ever are fudges.
By the way, the original version of this was pretty profanity late.
Yeah, I wrote it at like 5 a.m. drunk, so I was angry. Sub one is, if everyone in this hobby was as useless as you, we wouldn't have a hobby. So I'm hearing people screaming and typing angrily on the forums and in my inbox.
Well, go to point two on that, and then I'll give my counterpoint that may help blunt
some of
that.
Well, I kind of already gave point two in giving point one. Point one was that GM experience gives you some savvy as to what's fun about running a game and what's easy and what's hard. If your player character is sitting there thinking that the GM really does have it all in his head and you're entitled to just scream out whatever and the GM has to accommodate you at all times, you don't know what GMing is
like. Let me give you an example that maybe more people can relate to, including those who haven't GM'd. You know who makes the best customers in a restaurant?
People, former waiters. Yeah,
exactly. For the exact same reason. They know what it's like to be in the position where management seated too many people or the kitchen's backed up on something or other, but it's the waiter who gets to hear the bitching. And so a former waiter or waitress has sympathy for that and knows how not to be a jerk about that. They understand the position the person's in.
Now, Dan, I've seen this two ways. I've seen the other side of the coin where they've seen it. They didn't feel that they ever got a break, so why should they give anyone else
a break?
That's
the bitter old Hausfrau tech.
I've seen a lot of that.
Yeah, I ditto to what John said. But my pseudo counterpoint, and I say pseudo because I agree with what John is saying, is that I think that there are some people who, for reasons of personality or whatever, are not cut out for being GMs.
And I agree.
They're not good at it. They don't have fun doing it. And that's the goal of gaming, is to have fun, whatever. But I agree with what Chad has always espoused, that I think anyone who games ought to GM at least once or twice, just to understand what the process is like. So they're less of an ass as a player.
Yes, and we're not saying GM good, player bad. Obviously, there needs to be four players for every GM, or else we're not going to have a hobby either.
And I also want to say that this should not, N-O-T, not be the process. You have a player who plays the game, and he plays his character in character, and blah, blah, blah. Goes to GM, sees what's like, and then he becomes a tool of the GM, where he completely bows to everything the GM says.
No, NPC, GMs don't want that.
Yeah, GMs don't want
that. We want tension and opposition from our players. Are you kidding me?
It gives you a different perspective when you've at least run once. You go in having no idea what the GM's done to prepare for this. You have no idea what it's like, if you've never GM'd, to sit there and have them come up with something that you had never even anticipated they might even consider, let alone be trying.
A GM comes in with a notebook that is half full, a stack of maps, and he's been sending emails out, and there's a carnival that's come to the town, and everybody's going to the carnival. Well, yeah. And,
that is the plot of Earthshaker.
Well, yeah. And he even titled the adventure, it's like, this group's trip to the carnival. And the player says, guys, it's not really in character for me to go to a carnival, so I'm not going to go. I'm going to go to the next town where they're not having a carnival.
You know how
that right there has happened, and that kind of thing irritates the
now, of course, if the character from the beginning has been anti-carnival, that would be a different story.
Yeah, and if they were trying to build tension, too, you know, there's caveats to all this. Yes,
my character doesn't want to be at the carnival, but there he is a wonderful place for a player to be.
Yeah.
A guy named Mike used to be a host on this show before he had like 85 kids and disappeared into the ether.
He's had a lot.
He's up to what, three now?
Yeah, three or three and a half.
Two, three.
Yeah. Three and one in the oven?
Yeah. No.
No, it's
twins.
Twins, and a baby.
And then he married a woman.
Right.
Okay.
All right, we're not going to
Let's just go with 85.
I was going to say, I don't know what a half a kid looks like.
The
anyway,
point being, he gave me a life lesson, which has stuck with me to this day.
Wait,
and it wasn't about children. About
here? It was don't have kids.
It was, there is a difference between knowing, understanding, and application. Okay, here's an example. I can tell you statistically how much water per second pours over Niagara Falls. That's knowing. Sitting at the base of Niagara Falls and looking up it is understanding. Not going over it in a barrel is application. Now, the same thing is true of GMing. I think most players on some intellectual level have heard the complaining or whatever and know what a GM goes through. But you do not understand it until you have attempted it, until you've gotten in there, rolled up your sleeves, put your hand in the soil, and understood what it means to be a GM. And that then can enable application, where in the next game, you're like, you know what? I understand the GM is already juggling 150 things to keep this game going. See, I'm not going to add 151.
This would be a fun way to oppose him. This, on the other hand, would be terrible.
You know,
you know what that is.
I completely agree with your point, but I've always had a problem with that logic, that train of thought.
Why?
Because I think of heroin when I think of that. I have a friend who's on heroin, and his life is really messed up, and he's a complete addict. But I've never done heroin, so I really don't know
what
it's like.
Pandemic.
So I am going to do heroin so that I can have that knowledge.
Well,
and then, you know, it to me, that logic always breaks down.
Well,
because it can be applied to movies, too.
I think that's extreme, but look at
this movie. I think this movie's bad.
Well, oh, God. Chad's back to his I hate movies I haven't seen before.
Yeah.
But this is a problem I've known as long as I've known you.
Yeah, but look at it more in terms of this. Like, think of it like gardening or being a farmer.
Like
you
I said, though,
I
agree with
books.
The point.
You can read books about, well, this is what, you know, what farmers have to do to produce the food for us. But you don't really get it until, like Dan was saying, you actually go out and put in a garden and see how much freaking work it is to do.
You know, and if you
and
fail at
you
doing
go.
That, you appreciate what they succeed at.
Right. So I can see,
more.
I see Dan's point of that. But
no,
I sort of, too. But see, on your I think it really gets down to, like, personalities of people, too. Because, like I said before, you can have people that just don't have they haven't done it, but their personalities, they're just kind of a dick. I'm not going to the carnival. I'm going to another town. I mean, come on, people.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
yeah.
the freaking adventure. Do it. But you're just being a contrary ass. Well, I say, and you're going off.
Since Chad called me, I'm going to call slippery slope fallacy. The difference between GMing and heroin is there's nothing inherently dangerous about GMing.
Also, heroin said is enjoyable. There are GMing concepts that are dangerous on this show, sir.
I think some of the best GMs probably are heroin addicts.
Probably.
Yeah. I don't think it's a bad argument because
watch Basketball Diaries. You can't write unless you've been
addicted to heroin. Read the first edition of the Dungeon Master's Guide. Gygax, you think that man was sober?
We all know the truth. We all know that true creativity comes through, you know, chemical dependence.
Yeah.
So there might actually
Shut the hell up, Pat.
That's not an argument on why someone should GM.
Yeah.
But I do fully believe if you have never done heroin, as I have not, I don't know what that's like.
Dude, you shoot up all the time.
Okay, that doesn't mean I'm going to try.
I do adrenaline and Left 4 Dead too. That's just like it, right?
That's right.
Okay.
It's still a valid argument.
As fascinating as heroin
is. This is dumb.
And as relevant to gaming as that is, John, go ahead and move on to point three.
All right. Point 3 is a completely distinct point, whereas points 1 and 2 were sort of intertwined. Players lobby for more power opposite the GMs with things like rule-heavy systems. But all the GM ever does with the fuzzy area discretion he has, and hidden dice rolls and so on, is BS those rules in favor of the players.
That depends on the GM. That's true. There are GMs that feel like they are playing against the players.
Yeah, but they're f***heads. Yeah. And they're very much the minority in real gaming groups.
Those are the people that shouldn't be running the game.
Yeah, they should never be
that we discussed earlier.
Well, but hold on here. I'm going to put the impetus here on somebody else. I think John is right, depending on the group. But the problem, sometimes it can come from the GM. I've certainly seen, heard, talked to, played under GMs.
I've heard your horror stories.
Who are in that power. But more often than not, it comes from the players.
I think the players want... There are some players or some groups who want the Ninja Gaiden GM. They want to be challenged.
They say they do, but they want to win anyway.
I say deep down, come on. Anyone here who doesn't have a major psychiatric disorder, and I'm talking to you people, even if you're driving in your cars right now, raise both hands and close your eyes if you don't want to win. Because if you're on the road, raising both hands and closing your eyes is a way to guarantee you won't win.
I see.
Don't follow that logic too hard. But the point being that it's human nature to want to win. As a result, people, when they play a game, are going to try and get every advantage they can get. If you're playing D&D...
Not necessarily.
Depending on advantage. Well, hang on. A little more than that. Let me stress, I'm hanging, baby. Depending on the group.
Yeah. Don't get cheap on me, Dawson.
Most people, if they're playing a game and they have a plus one to hit with some weapon, they're going to take into account that plus one to hit with that weapon.
By the way, there were two magic items given away last week. There was a plus one armor ring and a plus one longsword.
I wasn't
human sized, so George is carrying it around and it's ridiculous on him. But anyway, continue.
The point being, though, that I think most people are going to want that plus one, even if it's just on a subconscious level. Now, I can say proudly, in most, not all, but most of the groups I've been in, there has been a pretty fair give and take where the group in general has not tried to abuse the GM, and in turn, the GM's not abused the group. The group has admitted to me, hey, do you realize we don't have this power, or we actually need to make a save against this? And I, in turn, when I roll a critical hit that's going to kill the wizard, I say, okay, it didn't kill you, it just knocked you unconscious.
That's why you use a screen. Oh God, here's the chance for critical. It rolls up a 19. Oof, just missed.
Yeah, exactly.
I did that last week, by the way.
But not every group.
Oh, you're cheating, though.
That's not cheating.
What the rules say.
But not every group is like that. I mean, you get some groups where,
they're the Ninja Gaiden group.
Maybe it's one of two things. Either it's the Ninja Gaiden group where they want the challenge.
Yeah.
Or
they're so afraid of maltreatment that they make you do it in the open and thus deprive you of the opportunity to edge it for them.
Has that ever stopped me from edging it? I don't use GM screens. Rolled out in the open.
Well, you also don't use rule systems. Boom. You're like, oh, a 20, he missed. And we're all like, all right, he missed.
Why not? It's consistent with everything.
Chance system. Anyway, you were saying,
but you also get the other thing where in some groups, these players just want to win at any cost. And I think the thing that everyone at the table's missing when you get that situation is the fact that, as we've said so many times, look, there's only one way to win a role-playing game, which is for everyone at the table.
Shank
to get a plus five Vorpal sword.
Everyone at the table, game master, players, whatever.
Get laid.
Different kind of game. To have...
It's so easy online.
I want to play John's game.
To have a good time. to tell a compelling story, to have moments of uncertainty, and then to have that thrill of victory or thrill of defeat or whatever. It's for everyone to tell a good story and have a good time. And so many people miss out on the fact that that's what it's about. And they play this ridiculous competition between the players and the GMs where they think winning for the GM means killing the players, and winning for the players means surviving the GM's wrath. And that's retarded.
Well, Rocks fall, you die. Oops, the GM won. I mean, come on.
I guess I've been really lucky in my role-playing career and all of the various GMs that I've played under, because for me, all the GMs, their ultimate goal was for the players to win too.
Yes, I mean, I think a same GM operates, there's
hardships here and there, and maybe you're going to lose this battle, but you're going to win the war. And I think, isn't that what all GMs should want? I mean, hopefully they all do. Obviously they don't, because you've got some horror stories here that you're relaying, but my God.
I learned a lesson from the game SimGolf. The goal of SimGolf is to make a course that looks hard, but plays easy. That's how I try to set up my games.
I think that there's just different groups and different kind of people, and different people want different stuff. And I think that how you win a role-playing game has nothing to do with how the game ends or even the ongoing experience. It's how you set it up in the beginning. Are you set up with a bunch of people who are all kind of going the same direction? Do they all want a dungeon crawl? Do they all want a story game? Do they all want this kind of experience out of it? I mean, and obviously everyone's different, even within groups, but can we all come to a, I don't want to say a compromise, because to me a compromise is nobody wins. Every positive gets bumped down to a neutral so everyone's happy, but, you know, it, can an arrangement be made? The game starts out with that. When the game starts out with the GM giving the players what they want and the players giving the GM what he wants and everybody coming together to do X, and X being whatever it is beat fun for GM. Everybody. If it is beat the GM, then that's it.
I agree. Yeah. If that's the type of game.
If you're playing the appropriate system like HeroQuest, wherein the GM has limited powers and is told to kill them at all costs, okay.
Hey.
Yeah, same descent's the same way. I mean, I've been in a group before where...
Did you know Elf is a class?
I've been in the groups before where they wanted me to run Temple of Elemental Evil. And I agree with Chad. As long as everyone's on the
Hey. Your Temple of Elemental Evil and well, damn giant
and
frogs.
I guess that is the big
God,
distinction.
I hate you so much.
See, that's a big distinction from like what I said. I guess I'm coming at it more from the aspect of playing in, say, like a long standing campaign. I mean, if you're in a group where you're playing like a long running campaign, obviously I think the GM's going to have to want the characters to win.
Yeah.
Because TPK if you don't, then all of a sudden that long standing campaign becomes a 5-session
campaign.
And it's over, move on to the next one because the characters are dead.
I've talked to GMs who feel that they don't have a good campaign unless they TPK at least twice during the course of the campaign.
How the hell do you come back from a TPK?
And then the players make new characters, and that's what the players want.
That's not the same campaign.
That's what the players want.
Some players are wrong.
Goddamn those player characters.
Yeah. John, let me start with what's going to sound like a disagreement but end with an agreement, so take this however you want. But there was an old BBC series called Blake 7.
Yeah, there was.
Where the first season was really good and had one particular crew. And in the end of the first season, start of the second season, everyone got killed, or almost everyone, and this brand new group of people pick up where the plot left off. Now,
it sounds dumb.
It was dumb.
Okay.
But the point being that, to me, it was completely stupid, and it was terrible, and it ruined the series.
But was the show popular?
I don't know. No, actually,
we don't know.
Pure Blake America 7 wasn't. Is a turd sequel to Leonard 6. But, as we
hope. Wow. But here's the point. That
you know Leonard 6, don't you?
No, I am familiar with Leonard 6.
Yeah. I watched them kill lobsters with butter.
With butter, buddy.
So... watch
don't it. Ask.
Just watch it. Just watch it.
Don't watch it.
How about we have a Leonard Part 6 party at Fear the Con 3?
That's what
I mean. Lobsters and butter.
All right, Dan, you were saying.
Awesome.
I'm sorry.
But my point being that, I mean, maybe for some people, that's what the compelling part of a role playing game is this plot. And the characters are inconsequential. If this group of characters die, I mean, look at, I don't know, World War II. You have a turnover of soldiers. One group of soldiers go to war. The majority of them die. A different group shows up and continues the same war. Maybe for them, that's a compelling story.
Yeah, but player characters don't give two hoots in hell about your stupid-ass GM plot. They want to look at their characters and how they grow and get more items and change the world.
But not me.
For me, I like new characters. I would have no problem if I died during a campaign, come back with a new character
John,
for the same plot.
I don't care about the stuff. I'm playing a game with Dan right now where I have...
I'm not just talking about the stuff.
I mean,
care about your player's role in the world, his background, where he's going, his relationships. You don't?
Yeah, I do.
Okay. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying it sucks when everyone dies.
I agree with you as far as an opinion goes. My personal... sounded very Donald Rumsfeld
I have no problem when my character dies. I agree it would suck to have the whole team, the whole party, personal all the group dynamics goes. Die. That's just gonna suck.
Personal preference-wise, I agree with you, but if there is a group and they want to have that challenge, if the GM isn't killing them...
Let's say it's a dungeon crawl and they're part of a bigger group and this is just new lieutenant. They might not care.
If they know every single encounter, and that encounter could be a fight, it could be a plot thing, it could be traps, it could be whatever your definition of an encounter is that is in your game that's fun, whatever. There are people out there who believe if they know going in that they are going to win every single one of those encounters without fail.
Well, no, that's boring as hell. We've all seen the Twilight episode where the guy wakes up in a casino and he wins every time and he thinks he's in heaven and then he realizes he's in hell because he wins every time.
Yeah. He can't even play pool because he does one break and every single ball goes in.
And just to be clear, by Twilight, you mean Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
Not that ghastly.
I didn't say Zone?
No.
Okay, Twilight Zone.
You just said Twilight. Yeah. The ghastly book
series. Edward dies and is on the wing and
we know what you're really thinking.
All right, picks up a hitchhiker.
Let's move on. Let's move on to the second aspect of this.
All right.
Why John loves PCs.
John loves PCs. Article 1. PCs who latch onto something and get a scheme give the GM a chance to develop the next game session into something he knows they will be interested in and allow him to move off of a defined plot he has to make up. I am doing this in my next Goblin game. Last session, Kavan took the mining materials you guys recovered from the caravan. It was like, hey, we have a cave. We can set up a mine here. What's stopping us? And I said, well, X, Y, and Z is stopping you. And he says, we could steal all that shit. And I said, well, yeah, you could. And so now, tomorrow's game is going to be about the race to get a gnome who knows how to mine so you can beat him to death until he tells you.
I absolutely and completely agree. This has actually come up in our current Sunday face-to-face game, whereas John's Wednesday game, as we said earlier, is remote. This has come up in our face-to-face game, where what we're doing is we're playing an Epoch Arisos, a Danverse game, and there's large...
scrunched up look on your face every time you say Dan.
Well, it's what everybody, it's at least locally, what everybody knows it as.
It's like, oh, look, it's poo.
But there's this large amount of time, or at least a notable amount of time, that people spend on the ship going from place to place. You've got 2 weeks from System A to System B. And so one of the things that I have always asked my players, or they oftentimes have volunteered, no matter what group I've run this for, as they eventually come up with side projects they're doing on the ship. I'm going to build a robot. I'm going to study this. I'm going to learn that. I'm going to investigate this. I'm going to try and figure out the truth behind...
practice my quick draw in front of a mirror.
That's the crappy plan.
Yeah, that's... We're getting to him, by the way.
But the point is...
He's in point C. You can read it if you'd like.
Oh, yes.
But the point is that these kinds of things have come up. But having said that, I mean, I'm talking about side projects here. You could certainly come up with something that's more plot related, that we ran into such and such a guy. Well, wait a minute. I'm going to try and learn more about this NPC, and I'm going to try and set up a political faction that's counter to what he's doing. In the case of John's Goblin game, our goblins are getting bullied around by an orcish tribe. And so one of the...
You're getting bullied around by the king, who has two orc bodyguards who maybe are bullying him around, except they are.
My character's interpreted that as we're getting bullied by the orcs.
Yeah.
And so my character is secretly, he's a total coward, being a typical goblin, but he's secretly trying to come up with these conniving little plans to eventually eliminate these orcs. Probably because he doesn't totally appreciate that the orcs are a buffer between the humans and the goblins. But nonetheless, he's trying to come up with a plan to deal with that. And here's something that could create an entire plot in and of itself, simply if...
Yeah, it substantially is the plot, by the way.
Yeah, if my character takes up with this sort of proaction based upon things that you've given us within the setting. And, you know, these projects I mentioned at Epoch of Rysos, they're very... inconsequential, or could be inconsequential. You know, I'm going to build a better robot.
I'm making a judo robot.
I'm helping.
Judo. Jiu-jitsu.
It's robotics, and I'm helping.
Mm-hmm. Point two.
Whoa.
PCs who roleplay in an engaging manner allow the GM to move from merely scheming about how to balance encounters and line up plots and into actual roleplaying. This is where I praise you, in turn, for trying to hide during the middle of what is obviously the guy tells you to go do something part of the mission. It forces me to get up and improvise, which is fun. I have fun when I'm doing that GMing. I don't know if y'all have fun when you do GMing. My best part of GMing is when I'm improvising, not when I'm leading the players down the path.
You know, I agree. In the last game that we did before this one, we were doing the rotating GM thing. We get to my week, and I take them into a city, and Chad's character goes out, and he's going to the local temple. And, you know, he's a monk, and all that. And basically, during the whole time, I never expected that. And we spend the next half hour, I craft this huge plot going on in the city. Chad's running into all this, that. There's all this conspiracy going on. I had none of that coming into the game. All of it was spur of the moment because of what Chad decided to do.
Yep.
And that was the most fun I had during that entire two-week period of running the GM, was none of that was on paper. That was all completely spur of the moment, and everyone around the table seemed to like that part.
Exactly, and sometimes that is the best. That Ruck Goblin I sent with you on game one, he didn't have a freaking name when I designed the game. That was all out of nothing, and I had a lot of fun running him.
You know what is really useful about that, beyond just it's fun? I love doing that because I have A, B, and C written for tonight.
Write things down.
I have in the past, but I in mind or planned out. I do make a lot of plans, but I have A, B, and
you
C.
You make plans, we tell you.
I have A, B, and C planned out for the night.
You're a whore, and I love playing games. Continue.
I have A, B, and C in mind, but we get a little bit of A, and then the players start doing something. I start improvising with them, and I start running with it and going off the cuff with it. Well, by the end of the night, I haven't really done A, B, and C yet. And I can save A, B, and C for next week. Now the campaign's longer. Yep. Now I have more material. It's great. And I have stuff to work with that came up from
tonight. You look down and you say, oops, I spent 5 hours a game tonight and I didn't get to plot point 7. I got a plot point for next week.
That's always the best problem to have.
In the game I was talking about, I gave them two options. They decided to stop in a city before going to either one of those options. Suddenly, that second option city, they just walked into it, and it didn't even exist 10 minutes before.
But have you guys ever run into as GMs? Because I know I have. You have your plan, A, B, and C, and then you have them go to a town or whatever, and you're hoping for some initiative, for a little bit of role play.
And everyone sits around with their thumb up their ass.
And they're like, okay, we went to the Color Animal Inn, and we bought our stuff. Let's go. And it's like, but guys, this town's cool. It has all this neat stuff.
I wrote this Thieves Guild in the sewer. Don't you want to go into the sewer?
Any of this part of the main plot? That's what I hate.
We talked about that 3 weeks ago, though. That's trying to artificially create those RP moments.
I'm going to cut the difference. It's a 50-50. In some cases, it's the case of the GM trying to invent things the players don't care about. Let me give you an example here.
On the other hand,
coming fresh off Christmas,
Carla
and I were in a store that had a toy aisle. And Carla was like, well, I want to buy some toys for my best friend's kids. completely different kind of toy store.
I was going to say, Miss right. Two Income, No Kid.
I don't know about
Scissors
Pat,
come to mind.
I don't know about Pat, but this story is less interesting to me now.
All right. Yeah. So the point being, though, I said to Carla, I said, look, let me ask you a question. When you were a kid, did you ever get presents from somebody outside of your family that didn't know anything about you?
Pat is playing with a pair of scissors in an extremely lewd manner. For all of our listeners who don't have video,
I'm going to take that away from him.
All right, anyway,
that was for you, Chris.
Pat, even when you're funny, you don't talk. What the hell is wrong with you?
So, I asked Carla, when you were a kid, did you ever get presents from someone who was not in your family and didn't know anything about you? Because I did on several occasions, and I'll tell you what, I didn't like any of them. Because the person who's buying the gifts for me had no idea what I already owned, had no idea what I was into or not into. And
Sears brand Transformers.
Yeah, exactly.
I shit you not, I got a box of Sears brand knockoff Transformers.
And the problem is, as a GM, sometimes you can
Guest certificates, fool.
Sometimes you can write a plot point where nobody cares. You just presume.
That's when you throw it out.
You just presume they care. But having said that, I think there's also a flip side to where you throw out something that by everything the players have told you about their characters, and there's some level of trust here, they've said their characters are into X, Y, and Z, so you throw out X, Y, and Z, and they don't bite. Mm-hmm. Or you
characters are a flighty mistress.
You make it clear the plot's over here, and just for whatever douchey reason, they're not going
to
care.
That is my single biggest complaint as a GM. This doesn't apply to everyone and all the time and all that sort of stuff, but if I have a pet peeve, it's lack of player initiative. It is lack of...
Yeah.
I mean, you can only get your story and get the stuff going out there so much, and you can only actively engage the player so many times. I mean, and by actively engage, I mean people coming up and talking to them, and things coming up and attacking them, and encounters that happen to them. I want my players to stand up and do things. I create this world. I populate it with NPCs.
Yes.
I put a plot in there.
Yes.
I have the plot engage with them. When are the players going to turn around and engage with the plot?
John, I want you to roll into point three, because this is one where I can definitely sermonize.
Point three. And this is actually exactly what you just said, Chad.
Sorry.
PCs, no, that's good. PCs who offer connections to the setting and motivations rooted in the setting allow the GM to tailor the game's camera time to things everyone finds interesting. They also help jog his creativity. Players who give their characters substantially no description are just dead weight.
I cannot agree enough. In past games, one of the things that I have required players to do, after we get past the group template, when they write their character backgrounds, I require them to give me a certain number of things that I can work with in the plot. Now, these could be open relationships, mysteries in their background, unresolved rivalries, whatever. I require them to give me a certain number of hooks I can work in the plot to make that plot personal to their character. Now, you have to be careful of that, because you don't want the game to become about one person.
Yes.
But nonetheless, it gives me the chance that it turns out the dragon horde that's menacing the city is actually led by so-and-so's missing uncle. I'm just making random crap up. But the point being that I require them to give me something so I can make the game personal to their character, and by proxy, personal to that player. And the one thing that worries me right now about our current Sunday face-to-face game is that I don't have that. That I have a group of characters who I'm worried.
Hey, man, I gave you a lot.
You did, and you were probably the one exception in that regard. But I'm worried I may not be able to invest into that plot. Mm-hmm. And therefore, I think the best workaround I've come up with is to skip over the characters and try to find some way to make the plot personal to the players. If I can agitate the players with a particular NPC, or if I can agitate the players, for example, Pat's really protective of kids. I'm not going to do this, but if I have some character or some NPC who's out there butchering children, I don't know why I'd do that. But point being, this would get Pat personally involved. Yeah. And so I may have to say, look, I've got no hooks for the characters. I may have to skip past that to agitating the players. And
you know what, and you missed that. I actually used that in our rotating GM thing. Pat was presented with a little kid that basically was following around his aloof character that didn't want to talk to anybody. Because this, exactly like you said, I know Pat as a person has that. He's a father. He naturally reacts to kids. I knew that
I hate children.
If I use the kid that
my
Chad
own Sky's friggin' awesome, but you know, all the other kids.
That's why the kid didn't latch onto you.
Right.
I was over your apartment that day that you like face slammed Sky into the table. So.
And you know what? That boy took it. He's awesome.
Yeah. I saw the tears and it was like, he was so
toughens him
cry.
Up.
Don't
Speaking
cry.
Of
Daddy
wish.
Would beat me more.
That's right.
I got a bitch about something here because Chris is not here to defend himself. So he was complaining a couple episodes ago about how the road is in limited release. And he thinks it's some conspiracy.
Oh, you hated the movie, didn't you?
I'm getting there. Yeah. He thinks it's some conspiracy to garner money or awards, or I don't even know what. It's some conspiracy to ruin his life. I don't know what it is. So I go out, because it's showing here locally, in a one little art house theater.
Which one?
The Tivoli.
Oh, the Tivoli.
Tivoli's freaking awesome.
I saw a 3D porno in Tivoli. It is crazy.
It is the neighborhood.
Okay, I want to see movies with you too, John.
Yeah, all right.
The neighborhood, hang out more.
The neighborhood's kind of bad. I'm in town, like, but all right, point is, so I went out and saw this movie, The Road. And, you know, everyone's entitled to their opinion. And the opinion I'm entitled to is the movie was horrible. It was boring beyond belief. And
but it had Aragorn.
I don't care. I don't care what it had. It was it was just freaking boring. I mean, nothing. It's what I call.
That's because you didn't take John with you. That's why it's boring.
At one point, Carl and I, in the middle of the movie, look at each other and start laughing because the movie was so boring. But it was what I call flashcard plot. Where imagine if I just handed you a stack of index cards and said, I want you to write on each one a random encounter. And I then ran a game or told a novel or whatever where all I did was just the group is walking along and randomly draw an index card.
It's
They run into wyverns. Next plot point, they don't have enough food. Next plot point, they're cold. Completely, it's just boring and I don't know. If you like
it. So it's like all the Star Treks except for DS9. Everything was disconnected from itself, and it was dumb until Sisko showed up and was a badass and was all like,
well,
they struck 16 Dominion borders along the Cardassian border.
I agree 100% with John.
Enterprise wasn't like that, though.
I've never seen Enterprise, and I want to.
I do not agree 100%, but I'm not going to follow that. But my point being that this movie was terrible, and at least for me. And so I call Chris, and the words that came out of Chris's mouth.
Hello?
Hello? Am I here again?
This newfangled thing wrong? Dad?
All but offended me was, well, you couldn't fully appreciate the story because it's about a father-son relationship and you don't have any kids.
Everything really changes you, Dan. Oh, God. That's so
there rough. Is nothing I hate more than watching a movie, hating the movie, and having someone come to me and say, well, you just didn't get it. No, I got it. I didn't want it.
Yeah. And wow. That was what
even expanding dad and
it's yes, that is the big one, like, more than
well,
any other.
Maybe
others
you didn't appreciate it because you don't have any kids. It's like, first of all, Chris, I think the father's love.
First of all, I've got pets, damn it. I think. And you know what? That's the one the parents love to hear. That's the one that sets our off right there. I know what you're going right through. There, I've got a dog. Oh, kiss my ass.
But first off, it's like, I think the father's love for his son and vice versa.
Can we even release this episode?
A father's love for his son and vice versa is a pretty freaking universal theme. And secondly, even if I've never been the father, I've been the son.
You are not the father.
So, I don't. What was even the original point here?
If I had
I don't
a dollar for every time,
it has nothing to do with what's on this
paper.
I'd
be broke.
So. Here, I actually had a point to make because Dan, you were bitching about.
Chad has a point.
Yeah.
All right. So players.
I know.
So characters who don't bond into the background.
You were bitching about basically, you know, players who are like, I've rolled up my character sheet, go, and that's it. That's all the work they've done. And you're like, can you name your character?
Can you give me anything to work with?
Yeah. My character's name is Chuck Norris.
Here's my solution.
Get out.
What will your character care about? You guess and hope you guess right.
Yeah,
here's my solution to that. A layer of bureaucracy. We've said it since the beginning. You should do character surveys. You should do a group template when this all comes out. It doesn't have to be huge and long. As a game man...
I'm sorry, please continue.
So sophomoric.
The best part of that is Dan was the loudest one to laugh at that. Mr. Straight Lace here.
Yeah.
Straight face.
I'm sorry. Continue. Never,
tell that to your Sunday school.
Yeah.
So remember, Dan, when you used to, I mean, we're talking back in the day with our bad games.
Right.
The crap games that we did. you demanded a minimum one paragraph write up on your character.
Yeah.
Tell me about your character. Now, it was all, you know, my parents died and I got revenge on them, but I hated my parents, so we...
And I have the sword that killed them, because
we were all teenagers, and this is...
My parents descended upon a village of orcs and raped and murdered them. Nice. It scarred me ever since, and now I'm an orphan.
So... So, I mean, to me, that solves the problem. If they give you a paragraph on it, it makes them think about it. It gives you some plot hooks, even if the plot hooks might suck. I go a step further, too. I've done it before where I've said, I want you to do a Google image search, and I want you to find a picture of your character. How can they find a picture of their character? Their character doesn't exist except in their own mind.
Noble Bear.
Noble Bear. Fine. No, but do a Google search. Say, we'll do something simple. Like, I'm playing a mercenary, and he's big and huge and Austrian and kind of looks like Mr. Universe. Predator, Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Search
boom.
Wayne Cole. There we go.
Wayne Cole.
There
yeah.
is your I, big I, buff say, mercenary.
You know, yeah. No. Yeah, it's going to be you and your Batman
this,
outfit.
I went through this back before he was a major actor, before he's really well known, before he's a household name. And
talking about Rodney Dangerfield.
No, the GM that I was playing under told me that, I think to everybody, a game is a different medium. To me, it's a novel. Some people's a play. Some people's a movie.
It's a movie to me.
To this particular GM, it was a movie. It wasn't you, but to
no, I know. In fact, I got that
right.
from him.
And
it's a hardcore, barely
this
legal.
Was long before the guy. Long before the
if
guy
Pat
was
talked, you would see that he's raising his hand.
He's throwing.
In fact, he threw the horns.
Yeah. Yes, but the point being that to this GM, and this was before the guy was a household name. He told me, "Your character's Hugh Jackman." If this was a movie, your character would be played by Hugh Jackman. And that certainly did add something. Yeah. But it just goes back to that damned baby bird attitude.
So you did show tunes?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm just checking.
But it goes
and
back
to the Tony Awards? Okay, I'm getting into my mind.
All
now.
We played was Final Fantasy X2. That was yeah. every year. Yeah.
That's
but
good.
It,
it's good to know.
It went back to that baby bird attitude.
Two-finger stranger. I guess I said that kind of loud and into the microphone. What you were saying, Dan?
All right, so everyone at home can see this. John has tied the mic cords around his fingers to the point of cutting off circulation.
Yeah, so apparently I'm not the only one who does visual.
This is like the yes. Boy Scout salute, but not.
Am I the only one that remembers this is an audio thing and not a video thing?
You know, I think we figured out Pat's problem. It isn't that Chris is on and he's not speaking because Chris is on. It's that we don't have John here to interpret his,
there you
that's
go.
Right.
Yeah.
his
that's
emotion.
Right. I'm the all judicial right. branch.
But
the
point being that it's that baby bird attitude of the players do not give the game master any kind
Dan,
of hook to
you've
work
been
with.
Downing players since we started this episode. Tell me one thing. Now, all jokes aside, tell me one thing that you like about players in general.
I'm not a player.
When
I just crush
right,
a lot.
Chad, and I'm going to have to hold this off a little bit because we're hitting up against the hour mark. But I will tease this. There's a topic that you requested we talk about in an episode we'll probably talk about next time, which is when players start role-playing on their own apart from anything in the plot. Mm-hmm. Now, what I will say along those lines, and I don't want to spoil the topic too much, but I will say along those lines, is I have had players where they design characters that from the outset have tons of hooks for me to work with, and from the get-go are invested not reactively, but proactively
yes, sir.
In the plot and setting that I've created.
Hallelujah.
And give me a lot to work with. And I will say that, look, players may agitate GMs because this is just the circle of life. You know, the lions eat the gazelles and all that kind
and
of
the shit. Antelope become the grass.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. No, the lions, continue.
I don't know.
And then you have the crazy players like me who... During our Skies of Glass game, which was set in Cape Girardeau, I made a trip down to that general area, and I stopped and took pictures of the town and brought
what?
It back to you.
You know
game.
What? Here's the thing, Wayne.
Does post-APOC Cape look any different than current Cape?
Nope.
Apparently, the bridge doesn't exist anymore.
But here's the thing. I tell you, Wayne, what the thing about that is some GMs may have been annoyed by that, because they said, well, wait a minute, you're trying to usurp my setting.
Hell
but
no.
To me, what that says is this. Why did you do that? Because you cared.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the...
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the same thing with this running this podcast. There have been times in the past where we've been late putting out a show and people have come on the forums and started bitching. And sometimes other fans will come to our defense and say, well, they're putting out free entertainment. Why are you bitching? But deep down in my heart of hearts, that's flattering. Why is it flattering? Because they wouldn't complain if they didn't care. If they didn't like Fear the Boot, they wouldn't be upset it's not been released. And it's the same thing. When you drive down to Cape Girardeau to see what it really looks like for the sake of our game, what that says to me is you are invested in the game we're playing.
And you need more hobbies.
And oh my God, you went to Cape.
Yeah. I was driving past. I was coming back from family.
It's on Interstate 55. Yeah, I mean, it's...
I can't drive 55.
It was 15 minutes out of my way, but I did take 15 minutes out of my 55. Way to take pictures.
But the nice thing I will say about players is, look, I mean, first of all, obviously you don't have a game without them. But the fact is that while we're sitting here bitching about bad player characters or bad players...
We love good players more than we hate bad players, or else we wouldn't GM.
Exactly. That if I did not...
We wouldn't do this show. We would play board games all the time.
If I would be at home playing WoW right now, I guarantee
you. Yeah, exactly. If I did not have more positive than negative experiences with players, I wouldn't still be a GM. I'm a GM because the majority of my player interactions have been positive. The majority of my players have been positive. I love watching them experience, enjoy, be thrilled be concerned by, and solve my plots.
When you run a good game and they're all like, good job, it feels better than like anything.
Well, or when these players, you watch them get upset by a plot point or be thrilled by a victory. The reward as a game master I get from that is worth far more than the negative of any of these douchey player things we're talking about. What I want to do is not fix a massive and pandemic problem, because if it was massive and pandemic, I wouldn't GM, but rather to say to the minority of people, or maybe even the majority of people that do this a minority of the time, look, just as the game master is working hard to bring his game, you as a player need to work hard to bring your game as well. You know, you need to bring something. Don't be a passive observer. Don't be that baby bird. Be somebody that's part of the wolf pack. Be somebody that's out there working together to bring down the prey of a good game, which is a completely nonsensical analogy.
Man, but, dude, that was deep.
To bring down the baby birds that the mother is barfing in their beak. Be the wolf pack who eats barfing birds.
For wolves.
For wolves. Shh. We need that on a t-shirt. Be the wolf pack.
All right, so
barfing birds.
Next time when we come back, we've got a couple things we're going to talk about. One is role playing amongst players has nothing to do with the GM. Chad, it's something you suggested, and also now that Chris is a certified proctologist or whatever it is he is, we are going to have him do an episode with us on gamer health. And some simple tips you can use to improve your health and quality of life.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about that attitude, too.
Yeah.
And since half of our current group is on diets and trying to watch their
health. And the other half is...
Yeah. Hey, so Chad and I in particular are looking forward to this.
As long as I don't have a cyst falling out of my ass, I work out.
So I have put...
It's a common problem for you with the cyst?
Recently, yeah.
I have put Chris on notice that we are going to be talking about this soon. So these are the kinds of things that you guys can look forward to, or rue as the case may be. But something you definitely want to look forward to is Fear the Con. Like I said, January 1st, go to fearthecon.com. Be sure to get your tickets. Start setting up games and signing up for games. I have decided. I haven't decided on all my games. But
dude, what game am I going to run?
I don't know, but I tell you right now, I am definitely running Fast of Star Trek, Ship-on-Ship Combat, Federation versus Klingons. I need my Federation, I need my Klingons, so you guys be getting ready.
I love Ship-on-Ship, actually.
While Pat thinks about that, you guys have a good week, and we will catch you next time.
Good luck editing this.
Bye.
See ya.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2009. Listeners are free to use the show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.